You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Of Newton. It's on the ground and still on the ground. Picked up by T.J. Ward at the 4-yard line. Vaughn Miller did it again.
Alabama back on top of the college football world. Ladies and gentlemen, football to the max.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Wow, the show is going to start with somebody typing really loud. Well, it was like one of those, well, do I let him finish or do I just go on? I didn't know what I'm supposed to do.
Hey, at least someone's doing something other than looking at their phone.
Right? Yeah. You know, at least Randy's not sitting here. We don't hear the Pokemon Go theme going on. Yeah.
So I have it on mute. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man.
God, he had to be doing that. Look, we already spent 5 minutes of Pokemon Go on the previous show. Let's not do that again.
Not enough Johnny Manziel talk, though.
Oh, God, Gary, is this going to be like the Kellen Winslow thing? We just keep mentioning that.
No, it's a good idea. We'll have coupons sometime and do that.
Oh, okay. No Boston Market trips here. Anyway, so we just did the Big Ten preview. We will be doing the American Athletic Conference 2016 preview here. If you did not catch the Big Ten and you're just listening to us now, gonna go ahead and say this: once we get later into the season, where there will be news going on while we're doing these, we want these to stand by themselves. So if there is news and there's plenty of it enough to fill at least 30 minutes of a show, we'll do that separately and you'll get it in your feed in there. So you'll get the latest news that happened at the time that we're doing the podcast. Same goes with the NFL. Same goes when we do the NFL previews as well. We'll try to keep that being able to stand by itself. So this kind of covers some teams that Gary likes to talk about. And it's really awesome to be able to have the Last Word on Sports College Football Department Head Tony Siracusa be able to not only help us out here, but to give us one hell of a awesome preview. He goes about, but I'm talking about by the time you get finished listening to this, there ain't gonna be a whole lot for us to say, because he says everything you need to hear in this 44 minutes of listening to Mr. Siracusa preview and discuss with me the AAC. So after you get done listening to this, we'll be back with our full standings and who wins the conference and the championship game and all that. So, here you go. Tony Siracusa talking AAC. Here we go. So, here with me today, I have the head of the Last Word on Sports College Football Department. So, introduce yourself and what you do for Last Word on Sports.
Hey, Sean, it's Tony Siracusa. Glad to join you and happy to be with you, talk a little college football. Like you said, yeah, I head the college football department for lastwordonsports.com, and we've got about 25 writers around the country covering different teams, different beats. I write a bunch of columns, have a weekly national preview column during the season, and write a bunch of other columns on more of the kind of off the beaten path of college football type of topics that tend to interest me. And so it's been busy off season. A lot of the conference media days are starting next week. We'll we'll be heading in big into the SEC media days that start next week, and those are always quite a show and quite the dog and pony show that they put on in Hoover, Alabama. So things are really starting to kick into high gear for us.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, it's been fun just some of this offseason. Of course, you know, the typical Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh banter about the satellite camps and other things that go on with that. And one of the things that I found curious that I don't understand how this has not been a thing a long time ago, but they apparently officially made it a bylaw or something now where finally all 6-6 teams must get a bowl before you let any of the other teams below them get bowls. I mean, why did this take so long for this to happen?
Right. It seems like it should have been an obvious long ago, right? I mean, you know, if you've got a better record, you should get in. The reason that it wasn't is because the Power Five conferences, of course, are pretty much controlling the college football landscape right now. And if you're a city who is hosting one of the smaller bowls and you're dying for some big time attention, you're looking to take a team that is 5-7 overall, but you know, in the middle of the pack in the conference, but is a major school at in a P5 conference, overtaking someone from one of the smaller conferences like the AAC. And the NCAA stepped in long overdue and said, look, that's not the way this is going to work. You know, we're going to put in teams based on the records. And that's just the way it's going to be. If you got a team who is, who's in the American Athletic Conference and they're 6-6, you're going to take them over a 5-7 team from the Big Ten. And that's, if you run out of the 6-6 teams, fine. Then you can dig a little lower. But there's gonna be a hierarchy chain, and it's gonna be based on record. And you're right. I can't believe it wasn't done before. But I think it's one of the things that never really came to light until the Power Five conferences really gained their autonomy in the college football world, and really kind of took over running the bowl system and obviously the playoff system.
So, I mean, speaking of that American Athletic Conference, which we got you here to talk about specifically, I mean, one of the things that seems kind of interesting going into this season is that the Big 12 decided that they were going to, even with 10 teams, have a conference championship. And now there's a lot of rumors going around that they could come and decide to, not that they would be the first conference to do it, but that they would come and try to poach some of these American teams next season. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's going to wind up happening?
I think it's a distinct possibility. I think what you're looking at is 2 years ago, the Big 12 got hurt by not having a conference championship game. The NCAA mandate had been you have to have 12 teams and you have to have them broken up into two divisions and you have to have a conference championship game. And if you want to, you know, if you're going to compete for a national championship, essentially, and certainly that became true during the playoff, the new playoff format. And if you remember 2 years ago, you wound up basically with co-conference champions in the Big 12, which was crazy because it just meant they had the same record and it didn't really work and it hurt them. Last year, the NCAA offered them a way out. They said, we will allow you to have a conference championship and to even have a conference championship game, even with only 10 teams. You can just take the top two teams in the conference and you can have a championship game that way. And that's fine. We'll allow it. We're not going to allow it long-term, but we're going to allow it. And for some reason, the Big 12 didn't do it, and they should have. And this year they are. But to your point about expansion, they're now looking at, you know, we're only going to be able to do this 10 teams in a kind of bizarre playoff format or conference championship format for so long before just, you know, we're going to get to a point of absurdity. So we're going to need to expand. And I think that there are some viable teams in the AAC that would make perfect sense from a market standpoint, from a geography standpoint, to go play in the Big 12, get into the 12 teams, and it's certainly going to be more money for whatever two teams out of the AAC make that leap.
Well, looking at just last year, the AAC seemed to be the darlings that everybody was talking about. So many bowl games that they went to. Mm-hmm. Everybody talking about, oh, we're going to make it into a Power Six with everything that's been going on. Do you see a lot of what happened last year continuing into this year?
I think you're absolutely right. Last year they were the darlings, and I think a lot of it was because they caught people off guard. It was kind of a sleeper conference that people weren't paying that much attention to, unless you were a complete college football nerd, you know, like the two of us, you know, me living on the West Coast, you know, college game day starts at 6 a.m. and I am wide awake with the coffee watching every minute of it. And because I'm on the West Coast and we get all the West Coast game, I'm not going to bed till midnight on Saturday night, right? So there were a lot of people who just really had not paid much attention to the conference. And so Temple had a really great first half of the season. Memphis was good. And then, of course, Houston, which made a run where they just really missed out barely on being a viable playoff team. And so I think that this year a lot more people are going to be watching them. I'm not sure the product is going to be quite as good because of some of the attrition of some of the top talent who's now playing in the NFL. But I still think there's a lot of really good football to be played in this conference with some really good teams. So I don't know if they're going to make that charge to really have a claim to be one of the four playoff teams, but certainly to be one of the New Year's Six bowl game teams. I think there's no question about that.
So before we get into like specific teams and stuff, what do you see about the conference this year in general, going into 2016, that you think, okay, we need to keep our eyes on this happening, or whatnot?
I think the schedules will play a big role in this. When you look at, you know, the Power Five teams, always most of them will take one, maybe two tough out of conference games, and then, you know, cream puff or two. Of course, with the SEC, since they only play 8 conference games, they play 4 out of conference, and they always have that mid-November game against, you know, our Sisters of Mercy or, you know, whomever they're going to play before their rival game. And I think that a couple years ago, you looked at, because these schedules are done 4, 5, 6 years in advance, you look at some of the bigger teams that scheduled some of these teams that are now in the AAC as one of their kind of middle-of-the-road out-of-conference games, and now you look at how good the AAC is, and there are some really, really good out-of-conference games, some high-profile, nationally recognizable out-of-conference games that come out of this. And so I think the schedules are going to really help the AAC in their platform and really even potentially to move a couple of teams to bigger conferences.
I mean, speaking of, I mean, we should start with the perennial big team that, you know, made the biggest splash last year in Houston. They bring back their quarterback in Greg Ward, and they start off with a, like you said, big game against Oklahoma. Can they get that closer running the table again?
And you're right. Houston had a fabulous season last year. I mean, 13-1 overall, the AAC title. When I did a bowl preview show with someone, I told them, you know, talked about the Rose Bowl and the playoffs and all the other games. So I said, watch the Peach Bowl, because you're going to see a Houston team that is going to light up Florida State. And they did. You know, I mean, it beat them 38-24, but the game wasn't even that close. And they wind up ranked number 8 in the final AP poll. And they had a great season. Now, of course, the question is, can you duplicate that? You know, I think one of the biggest things that happened to them in the offseason was Tom Herman decided to stay as head coach, because after that kind of season, Tom Herman had a lot of opportunities to go somewhere else. And the fact that he decided to stay and keep working on what he had built, I think, was a huge, huge upside for the school. And as you mentioned a moment ago, you know, Greg Ward coming back for his senior season was also a big deal. I mean, he was the offensive MVP of the Peach Bowl. He was the MVP of the conference championship game. He had a great season. I mean, there were only two quarterbacks last year who had 1,000 yards running and throwing for 2,000 yards, and it was him and Deshaun Watson at Clemson, and Watson was, you know, a Heisman Trophy finalist. So it was a big deal for Ward to come back also. Now, to your point, you opened the season against Oklahoma. Ouch. Because, frankly, I think Oklahoma, going into the season, for me, Oklahoma's the best team in the country. They may not wind up in number one when it's all said and done, but going into the season, they're the best team in the country. You know, the game's being played in Houston, so a little bit of a home field advantage, although it's you know, being played at NRG Stadium, so it's, you know, it's not like it's in their, you know, on campus or anything. I think that even if Oklahoma beats Houston, which I think they will, if Houston can look good and keep it close, at least for a while, then I don't think a loss to Oklahoma in week one of the season really hurts Houston going forward for the rest of the year. I mean, when you look at the rest of their schedule, they're playing, you know, Lamar and Texas State as their other out-of-conference games. And they've got, you know, they don't have to play, well, they play Louisville, but they don't play Louisville until towards the end of the season. And so they don't really have that daunting of a schedule after Oklahoma for a good 5 or 6 weeks. And so even if they lose, if they can keep it close, keep it competitive, they'll have time to kind of lick their wounds afterwards. But I do think that they will keep it close. I do think Houston is that good. I mean, you know, we talked about Ward, but they even returned a really good defense. I mean, their linebacker had 92 tackles last year. You know, so their defense should be really good. They got Tommy Mark. They lost Tommy Mark and Landon Roberts to the NFL, but they're really deep on defense. They got a couple transfers that are coming in that sat out last year. So they've got a running back, Duke Catalon from Texas. He was a four-star high school prospect a couple of years ago, signed with Texas, never actually played. So he transferred, sat out last year. And then they've got a receiver who's coming in from Oklahoma State, Rashad Samples, who was another highly touted recruit a couple of years ago. So they've got some weapons coming in to help Ward out. Can they duplicate what they did last year? Well, not going to be quite as easy because you're likely to come off week one with a loss, but I see them being probably the top team in the conference again, and certainly in the West Division, but, you know, possibly in the conference overall again. I think they should be that good.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Herman was even talking about Catalon, apparently, aside from Ezekiel Elliott, just another almost right there with him as far as what he can do on the field. So it's going to be interesting to see it.
Right. He's the same style runner. He will run straight up at you and he will run you over. And then he's got speed in the open field. He is very much the same kind of runner as Ezekiel Elliott.
So another team in the West that was able to retain their coach, and I'm not even going to try to say his name, because his last name is a mouthful. But Navy, I mean, they first time they were in a conference last year, they did really well. They were one of the standouts as well in that West Division. You think, again, we're talking about Navy contending?
I think it's going to be hard for Navy. I really do. 11-2 last year, winning this year in school history, as you said, their first year in a conference. You know, did the typical thing of beat Army. You know, 14th straight year they've done that. But, man, they lost a lot. They really, really lost a lot. I mean, you know, Keenan Reynolds is the obvious one because he was just lightning in a bottle. This guy was just fabulous to watch. You know, he was near perfect in really running the triple option offense that Navy likes to run. But you go deeper than that, they lost all five of their offensive linemen, all five starters on the offensive line. That is not easy to replace in any capacity. They also lost their top pass rusher, Will Anthony. So they've got some real challenges. Tago Smith is going to be the new quarterback, and I don't think there's any question about that. He's a senior. You know, he's played in about 18 games, I think, over the previous 3 years total, you know, usually in mop-up duty. He's only got two starts, and he's got a grand total of 17 passing attempts and 70 rushes his entire 3 years. So, you know, and he's going to be doing it behind an offensive line that, while they're mostly upperclassmen who've been sitting and waiting their turn, a lot of juniors and a lot of seniors now coming in to play on the offensive line. It's an all-new offensive line. So you've got an inexperienced quarterback with an inexperienced offensive line. It is not going to be easy for Navy whatsoever. You know, now they also lost Chris Swain and Quentin Ezell from the backfield. So you've got some challenges. I mean, they're going to have Sean White will probably be the starting running back, but, you know, and at 6'1", 255, he's a pretty good size to run that triple option offense. But again, inexperienced. He's got a grand total of 19 carries from last year. Now, one of the things that is always an unknown with Navy and with the military academies is you don't know who's coming in as a freshman. They don't, it's not like on that first Wednesday in February when all the schools go through National Letter of Intent Day and throw a big party for all the signees. Unlike other schools, Navy doesn't actually announce their freshman class until July. They'll be announcing it next week, actually, when these kids show up for their plebe summer. So there's going to be a bunch of freshmen that we don't even know really much about them, other than they're expecting about 11 players who, you know, on average had about a 3-star recruiting ranking. But we really don't know much about them because they won't actually announce the class until next week. So I think it's going to be tough for Navy to come back. I think they'll have a decent season, but I think it's going to be hard to recapture last year. You know, one of the things in their advantage is, you know, they play Houston at home. They play Memphis at home. So that helps a little bit. Of course, you got the, you know, the annual game against Notre Dame. And this year it's down in Jacksonville. So, you know, a neutral field. I can see Navy, you know, winning 8 to 9 games this year, winning 11 again. That's going to be a tough haul with that little experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be rough. Just everything you've talked about, especially with that, when you got to lose everybody in the trenches, that's where you build from, and not having those guys, it's, I can already imagine.
It'd be one thing to be breaking in a new quarterback if you could at least do it behind an experienced offensive line. But when you're replacing your entire offensive line while you're bringing in a new quarterback, that's a pretty large task for anybody, no matter what team you are.
I mean, lucky for them that, you know, Memphis is also sort of going through similar things with, you know, they got to replace Paxton Lynch now. You know, obviously some positions, and they lost their coach too, so they have a new coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do you see Memphis in this?
I think, you know, Memphis, like you said, great season last year, 9-3, had a really good year, you know, finished third in the West. And you know, when you consider that they were 3-21 in the 2-year period prior to Justin Fuente taking over as head coach, and then 19-6 in his last 2 years there, that's a pretty amazing turnaround in a very short period of time. But like you said, he's gone now. He's at Virginia Tech replacing Frank Beamer. They brought in Mike Norvell, who was the offensive coordinator at Arizona State. And this is Norvell's first head coaching job. And, you know, he'd been an assistant at Tulsa. So he knows the region. He knows the teams in the conference. You know, what's going to be interesting is to see how quickly he can integrate his offense, the type of offense he wants to run. Because at Arizona State, you know, if you don't follow a lot of West Coast football, it was a very aggressive attacking style of offense. It's very much pass first, run second. Now, you know, there's reasons right off the bat why that could work well at Memphis. Like you said, they lost Paxton Lynch, and it's kind of funny if you think about it. You go back a few years, nobody would have thought losing Paxton Lynch would be that big a deal. I mean, the kid was a one-star recruit coming out of high school because he ran a wing T offense in high school and had only thrown a total of about 50 or 55 passes his entire high school career. But now you fast forward a few years and it's a big, big hole to fill. So it's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. I mean, they don't have an obvious front runner. I mean, frankly, I could see Riley Ferguson getting the job. He's a transfer from Tennessee who wound up going to Coffeyville Community College. He's a big kid. He's about 6'4", because the next viable option is a redshirt freshman, Brady Davis, who hasn't taken a college snap. And Ferguson to that point hasn't taken a snap in an FBS game. It's only been junior college football, but that still puts him ahead of what Brady Davis has. Have the running backs back, both of them. They've got Kraft and they've got Henderson, but they weren't very productive running last year. They were 96th in the country in rushing. So the good news is you've got a new quarterback, but you can rely on experienced running backs. The bad news is the running backs really weren't that good last year. We've got tons of depth at wide receiver with Miller and Proctor and Mayhew. So, you know, they've got some options. It's going to be how quickly a new quarterback can step in and get a new offense underway. And it may be one of those situations where it may be a little easier making the transition because you're not trying to bring a new offense into a quarterback who's been running something else the whole time. You're bringing in a quarterback who is wide open to being whatever he needs to be. So we'll see how quickly Norvell can get that offense in. He brought his defensive coordinator with him also from Arizona State, by the way, Chris Ball. And the defense should be really good. The defense is very experienced. They lost their top safety, Regis Ball, but they should be really good on defense. It's just a matter of how quickly the offense can adapt to the losses that they had.
So, I mean, you know, the rest of the West Division is sort of, you know, I guess at least two of them seems like they're not going to be doing a whole lot in SMU and Tulane. You got the new coach in Tulane that's got a lot of talk going on for that school, of course, actually my dad's alma mater. But, and you know, anything we should expect from the other three teams in the West that we haven't talked about?
I honestly think it's a pretty big drop-off from the top three, you know, Houston, Navy, Memphis. A pretty big drop-off down to Tulsa, Tulane, and SMU. It really is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about improvement at Tulsa and Tulane, and, you know, as my grandfather used to tell me, that's great, but you can't fall off the floor. You know, when you were 1-7 in conference like Tulane was, or 3-9 overall, look, a three-game upswing is massive. And you're not going to compete for the division championship with that. And you're not going to, you know, you're not going to compete for the division title with that. But, you know, that's fine. But the talent level is from the top three to the bottom three in the West is pretty significant.
So moving to the East, you had, you know, some teams making some noise last year. And one in particular with Willie Taggart as the coach seems to be that team that everybody is sort of picking to not only win the division, but maybe really challenge Houston in that conference championship game. Of course, talking about South Florida, about 4 hours away from me over here.
Sure.
What do you see South Florida really – do you see them really being able to make a challenge?
I do. I do, actually. I like South Florida. It's interesting. I was going through – you know, this is the time of year when some of the prognosticators, the nationally known prognosticators, put out their magazines in digital format now, you know, these days. And I see a lot of people split on South Florida. I see a lot of people, there was one publication that predicted them to be the biggest disappointment in the conference, and then someone else picked them to win the conference. And I think that pretty much says a lot about South Florida right there. It's they have the potential to do it. They can do it. They certainly have a lot of experience coming back. They were 8-5 last year, which, you know, doesn't sound like it's rewriting the history books, but they'd had 4 straight losing seasons prior to that, and they made it to their first bowl in 5 years. So they got hot in November. They got hot down the stretch. They wound up losing the Miami Beach Bowl, I think. But they got hot in November, and they've got 14 starters returning, and a lot of it on offense. I mean, they've got a junior running back, Marlon Mack, who had 2,400 yards and 17 touchdowns over the last 2 seasons. They've got a junior quarterback, Quentin Flowers, who had 3,200 total yards last year. He had 991 rushing, so he's very much a dual threat. For the first time in anyone's memory, they actually have a decent backup quarterback should something go wrong. They've got Ashanti Wooler, who transferred from UCLA when he got buried on the depth chart after they signed Josh Rosen. So they've got a lot of offensive potential. Going to be some challenges on defense. Their defensive coordinator, Tom Allen, left to take the same position at Indiana. So they've got some changes to make. They promoted from within. They took linebacker coach Raymond Woody and promoted him, and he says he intends to keep the same kind of hybrid attacking style of defense. Yeah, they actually run a 4-2-5 defense, which, you know, that fifth defensive back is a bit of an outside linebacker, a bit of a corner, you know, so that's why I say it's kind of a hybrid type of defense. But you know what? They were 14th in the nation last year in interceptions, and they were 13th in the nation in tackles for loss. So the defense is there. There shouldn't be any major adjustments, even with the new defensive coordinator, and the offense certainly should be capable. So I expect them to improve over the 8-5 they had last year. I expect them to be a legitimate contender. I mean, frankly, I think they win the East. They are my pick to win the East and play for the conference championship, probably against Houston. So they'll get a better bowl game out of it, certainly. And you know what? You go to that conference championship game, and when you've got an offense that can put up numbers like that, you've got a slugger's chance to win the conference.
Yeah, certainly. You know, it'd at least be a fun game to watch. Certainly,
right. And they've got some. You know, their schedule is, I mean, they're gonna start 3-0 because they play Towson, Northern Illinois, and they play at Syracuse. So they're gonna start 3-0. Then they've got a home game against Florida State. You know what? This is one of those games that, you know, people like you and I remember a few years ago. You just laugh at it. Oh, Florida State playing South Florida. I am not going to be surprised if South Florida beats them. I'm really not going to be surprised. They play Navy at home. They play Central Florida at home at the end of the year. So the schedule works out really kind to them as well.
Yeah, and I mean, another team that they're very experienced. They made the loudest noise last year, beating one of the ranked teams, and especially a Temple team that we think of them more in basketball. You know, we don't think about them in football. And all of a sudden, right, last year, we're watching them play football out of their minds. You think Temple's going to be that team again?
You know what? They could be. And that's the thing. They could be. They've got 7 returning players on offense and another 7 on defense. You know, they've got Pat Rhule in his 4th year as head coach now. And, you know, goodness gracious, he went 10-3 last year, which was the best record in school history. They did lose some significant players on defense. They, like I said, they've got 7 players returning, but they lost 3 defensive backs. They lost 2 starting defensive ends in Nate Smith and Matt Loenitis. They lost a couple of offensive linemen. So, again, we're looking at a team that is losing players in the trenches, and that's never easy. Now, the upside for them is they've got their quarterback back, P.J. Walker, 2,900-plus yards last year, 19 touchdowns, and they've got their running back back, Jahad Thomas, who, frankly, is probably one of the best running backs in, I'd say, top 10 running back in the country that most people don't even know about. Had 1,200 yards last year. The challenge with him was that they used him so much early on, he really wore down at the end of the season. I mean, he only had 69 yards in the conference championship game against Houston. He only had 5 yards total on about 8 rushes in the bowl game. So they've got to find a way to diversify the offense a little bit more than they did last year. And if they do that, then yeah, they can compete for the East Division title. I mean, you know, they play Penn State again, like you mentioned. They beat Penn State last year in Philadelphia, which that's what got everybody's attention, obviously. Now they got to go to Penn State this year. But, you know, again, you take a look at their schedule and they open up, you know, at home against Army, and they open up at home against Stony Brook. So they certainly have plenty of time to prepare for the Penn State game. And then, you know, later on in the year, they're playing South Florida at home, and they're playing Cincinnati at home. So they've got some, you know, they've got some potential. Like I said, it's about diversifying the offense for them. They can't rely on Thomas so early on as much as they did last year.
I mean, and a team that I think a lot of people were thinking were going to do a lot more than they wound up doing, especially with a coach that everybody knows his name and Tommy Tuberville and everything, going 7-6, being very disappointing in conference. What's going on with Cincinnati? And they have to do better, right?
They do. And it's kind of a strange situation because you wouldn't think that, I mean, you know, look, 2 years ago, Tommy Tuberville was winning, you know, a conference championship. But, you know, they also won conference championships before he got there with Butch Jones. And so, of course, you get the fan base that says, yeah, he won a conference championship, but he won it with Butch Jones players. And that happens pretty much anywhere you go. And he's 25-14 over 3 years there, but yet it doesn't feel like he's accomplished as much as he could have or should have. It feels like they've underperformed. And when you end the season the way they did last year, I mean, they got hammered by South Florida and by San Diego State in the bowl game. And you know, when I say hammered, and I keep saying it, the combined score of the two games was 107-34. And so when you finish 7-6, and that is your lasting impression that you leave going into the off season, it's hard to say that a coach who won a conference championship 2 years ago is on the hot seat. So I won't say Tuberville's on the hot seat, but I'm going to say his seat's starting to feel kind of warm. You know what I mean? If he doesn't perform better this year, then he is going to be on the hot seat. Because, like I said, even though he's got a viable record considering it's Cincinnati, it just doesn't feel like they've accomplished as much as they could have. The challenge for him this year is he only got 10 starters returning. So you're coming in to a big impact year for the program, and you only got 10 starters returning. Now, they got their quarterback coming back, and that should be good news. Gunnar Kyle is back. You know, he threw for 2,700 yards. He's got a great completion rate of about 64-65%. The problem is you don't know what you're getting with Gunnar Kyle. I mean, he missed a handful of games last year with an injury, and then he missed the bowl game. He missed the blowout loss to San Diego State. He left the team for a period of time due to what, you know, they habitually call undisclosed personal reasons. And so he's actually, even though he's a veteran, he's kind of an unknown coming back into the season. I know after the spring scrimmage, Tuberville said he's got to earn his spot back. He's not giving him the starting quarterback job just because he was there last year. The problem with that theory, it sounds great, you know, that you're going to be tough and the young man's got to prove himself, but your backup is Hayden Moore, who you know, he played when Kyle was hurt, and he played in the bowl game, and he threw for 1,800 yards, but he's got more interceptions than he does touchdowns. So, yikes. So, you know, you put yourself, if you're Tommy Tuberville, you put yourself in a position you never want to admit that your job's in jeopardy and you're making decisions based on the fact your job's in jeopardy. But let's just say your job could potentially somewhere soon be in jeopardy. Are you going to put that on Hayden Moore? Maybe, but man, that's a big risk. You know, really is a big risk. And on top of that, they're bringing in a new offense. They got a new offensive coordinator. They brought in Zach Taylor, who spent the last 4 years in the NFL with the Dolphins. And, you know, you look at what they did in the spring, and it seems pretty clear that they want to come into the season running more of a no-huddle, a pro version of the no-huddle offense to better utilize the running game, which, you know, they've got Tyon Green, they got Mike Boone, they combined for 1,400 yards last year. It's probably not a bad idea. Take some of the pressure off of whichever quarterback you're going to go with. They lost all five wide receivers, so you don't know what kind of depth is there at wide receiver. It probably is a good idea to just sit back and rely on your running backs for a while as much as you can, kind of build your flow of the offense as the season goes along.
Yeah, it seems like they've got a lot to deal with in that shuffle there.
They really do. And you know, and they open, I can't, you know, like so many of these teams, look, they're opening up against Tennessee Martin. So, you know, you got some room. But then they go to Purdue, and it's not that Purdue is going to be that great, but it's a tough road game. And then, you know, they've got a home game against Houston right there, week three of the season. And it's a home game, and they get South Florida at home, and they get, you know, later on in the season, they're playing BYU at home, and they're playing Memphis at home. So they've got some critical games at home, but it's not going to matter if your offense is not clicking the way it should.
Certainly. And, you know, like you said, Tommy Tuberville needs to figure it out because at that
– And quickly.
You have another one of those seasons. You never know. They might decide to pull the plug right there.
Especially to take it kind of back full circle to where you were talking earlier, especially if the administration at Cincinnati sees themselves as one of the teams potentially moving to a P5 conference, then you're not going to settle for another 7-6 season and getting lambasted at the end of the year. You know, if you have a vision of moving to one of those P5 conferences, then you're not going to, you know, you're not going to settle for that kind of play.
Oh, certainly not. I mean, you would think that Houston would be the other one, but Cincinnati having the prestige of being that team that has done things before, you'd think that they would be the other one. And you know,
well, and because Cincinnati's a bigger media market than so many of these other teams. And you're right. If there is going to be expansion, and let's just assume that it's two teams going to the Big 12, Houston is the obvious one, first and foremost. No question. Geographically, it works. Media market, it works. It's a good-sized media market, bigger than some of the programs that are already in the conference. You know, and then at number, you know, for a second one, you know, you're looking at either Cincinnati or Memphis, really. And, you know, Memphis brings a lot with football, brings a lot with basketball. Cincinnati right now brings a bigger media market and some halfway decent basketball from year to year, but the football's got to step up.
Yeah, certainly they do. And I mean, speaking of another, they're kind of seem to be like on the rise. They're obviously another basketball powerhouse when you think about them. But you know, at least in the last decade, they've really come on football wise in UConn. They're kind of another one of these that some people think, okay, they have a lot of the same traits as Temple, they could do something, and then you've got, you know, UCF and East Carolina that are kind of in the bottom, but do you see Connecticut as maybe being that surprise team that, like, nobody's really talking about, but they could do something?
Yeah, I think, yeah, you know what, I think UConn can, and I think they can because they're in the East, which doesn't have the same talent level that the West does. And so, you know, you've got, you know, your quarterback returning at UConn, And you've got an experienced team, you know, coming back. They've got a very experienced offensive backfield. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they can certainly challenge for the Eastern Division. Like I said, South Florida to me is significantly better than most in the division because of their experience in the offensive backfield. But, you know, that's what Connecticut has got also. So if that's what we're basing a contender on, then UConn definitely has a shot to make a run at the East Division. You know, can they win the conference? I don't think they match up well against Houston or Memphis, talent-wise, and certainly not on the defensive side of the ball. But they can certainly win the East. They can certainly surprise some teams. That's a definite possibility. They've made huge, huge strides in the past couple of years.
So anything else you want to say about the conference before?
You know what? I mean, for people who just haven't really gotten acquainted with the conference because it doesn't make all the noise that the SEC does, and you don't read stories about, you know, like you do with Jim Harbaugh, you know, tagging Nick Saban all over the media, and it doesn't get the media highlights. If you really just want to watch some quality football, there are some really good games. You know, we talked about the Houston-Oklahoma game, and Houston plays Louisville. Memphis plays Ole Miss first weekend of October. That should be a great game, and it's down in Oxford. It's a tough road game for Memphis. These guys are playing some really good schedules, a few really highlight games, out-of-conference games during the year, and then the conference, of course, will be very competitive. You know, we talked about the South Florida-Florida State game. I mean, I've got that one circled in red, September 24th. You know, it's it should be a great game, and it's a home game for South Florida, so I think that matters quite a bit, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna be pulling for that South Florida win. I'm not a big Florida State person, so.
Yeah, no. Hey, I'm with you. It's not even an anti-Florida State thing for me. It just feels like it's an upstart beating one of the blue bloods of college football, and I think those things are fun, and I think they're good for college football.
Yeah, and I'll get people talking about the conference some more.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Get you more prestige. And get you more eyeballs watching, you know?
All right, Tony. I mean, you have broken this thing down for us. I don't think we even need to do analysis after this. You already just did everything. But, I mean...
Glad to help.
We appreciate it so much. Hopefully we can have you on again, as we're going to be doing so many different conferences until we get up to that first week of the season. So thank you so much.
Glad to help, Sean, anytime.
All right, you have a good night. All right, that was Tony Syracuse giving you the in-depth breakdown of the AAC, and I apologize, I have to run off to work in about 15 minutes, so.
Well, it works out good, because Tony, like you said in the interview, did everything for us, so see ya.
Yeah, no, I mean, he did a great job, and obviously, you know, that's why he's the department, he knows his stuff. I mean, any thoughts on anything about what he's about the teams before we get into our talking about the standings?
I'm just excited to watch a lot of Houston. I think they're by far the class of this division, and just to see, Greg Ward out there doing his thing and giving them a chance to maybe cause some trouble as far as the playoffs go will be fun.
Welcome to the club, baby. Just going to say it. I've been championing this team for a long time now, and I'm glad they're getting respect. I just love it.
Ever since Case Keenum.
Ever since Case Keenum and all those other great quarterbacks out of this team.
Well, you know, you can't deny what you did in college, you know. So... getting into these standings, what do you think, Randy?
I should have been writing his down. all right, let's just go with the East, and from the bottom up, I have UCF in last, East Carolina in fifth, Cincy in fourth, UConn in third, and Temple will be up there, but I have UCF winning the East. In the West, let's go Tulane in sixth.
SMU. Oh, you have USF winning the East? Then.
Yes, I have USF winning the East. And let's see, Tulane in sixth, SMU fifth, Tulsa fourth, Navy third, Memphis second, and Houston by far and away the winner in the West, and I'll have Houston be the winner overall.
All right. I'll take the reins, and I'll look at this, and I'll say with the East, I agree with Randy. University of South Florida is top. Then I'll go, I don't know, I'll go UConn, then Cincinnati. Then I'll head on over, give ECU some love, maybe. Oh, you know, I'm doing that wrong. I missed one. Excuse me. Temple is number three, by the way. Then we'll run down ECU, and then, of course, UCF running it out. Over in the West, I am going to go, of course, give Houston the number one props. They are the top dogs for me. Then I'm going to go Memphis, Navy. No, I'll give SMU some love. And then, of course, you know, who cares what the rest, but Tulsa, Tulane, there you go.
I'll go with in the East, I got UCF last, East Carolina. Then I got, Cincinnati, then UConn, then Temple, and then South Florida will win that division. I've got Tulane in last. Sorry, Dad. I hate to do that to you. That's where my dad went to school. SMU, Tulsa, Memphis, Navy, and Houston will win the division and win the conference by beating South Florida. One thing I meant to do that we did not do for the Big Ten, I guess we'll have to do it the next time we do the ACC. Remind me before we get to the standings that we need to do who gets to bowl games. Out of the conference, like which teams you think are getting good enough records to get bowl games. But just remind me next week to do that for these two conferences before we start on the next conference. But all right, we gave you our standings. Again, thank you again to Tony. He's going to be – he actually lives in that California – the around – that Southern California area, so he's going to be back for the Pac-12. I got that confirmed already, and we got another last word on sports, guys. I said Justin Gordon doing the ACC next week, and Brandon, I think, is going to be there to do the double on that one as well. And, yeah, join us if you care about both the college and NFL ranks of football. We'll be doing our AFC South preview I already got two of the interviews set up. I got, you know, we'll have to see because we don't have last word writers for the Colts and Titans, so we might have to use some of the guys we've used in the past for that. Just check out everything on the WTM Network. Subscribe, rate, and review if you've enjoyed the podcast here. Again, thank you to the people that helped us out between the two podcasts this week on the Collagen. And take care, everybody. For Randy, Gary, and myself, signing off.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.